America, and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I, of course, am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. And joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Yo.
Hello.
So we're right now on the tail, about the tail end of August. And down here where I live, the tail end of August is a little weird because once September goes around, it cools down for a little bit, and then all of a sudden asshole summer decides it wants to join the party.
Yeah.
Now, do we need to explain what asshole summer is? Asshole summer is what happens when, you know, summer has had its going away party, you know, and it's gone, and now, you know, autumn's here, and autumn's getting its welcoming party, but then summer shows up, breaks down the door, drinks all the booze, and now he won't fucking leave.
Yeah. And then usually at the end of September, we always end up with drunk asshole summer, which is the same thing, just more
drunker.
Unexpected.
Yeah. Mm. Slightly more random.
Yeah.
He might accidentally set your curtains on fire.
Yep.
Something like that. But anyway, so this episode is going to be for August 24th, 2018. And this week, you know that we've been waiting for that moment when everything with Trump would finally just collapse?
Yeah.
Like, you just the moment when the whole thing would just start crashing down.
Yeah.
All around us, and we can just sit back and eat popcorn and watch it all happen.
Yeah.
Well, it officially started this week. I mean, we had already seen, you know, shit happen with him the previous, but this one in particular is pretty, let's just say they're calling it Black Tuesday. And for a very good reason, you're going to find out.
Yeah.
But
we just call it the Trump dump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in other news, we'll be talking about Kevin Spacey put out a new movie. And if you didn't know about it, well, join the club because nobody else did. Michael Jackson Thriller is now no longer the biggest selling album in the United States. You'll find out what took its place. Elizabeth Warren is actually out there trying to use legislation to battle corruption, and we'll see. Well, you'll see how well that's been going. And a story out of my home state of Georgia, specifically from Randolph County. Voter suppression is kind of a thing here in Georgia, and they've got a lot of legal ways to go about it. But they kind of got caught on this one. You're going to find out how.
Yeah.
All this and more on everybody's favorite piece of, well, you know, audio dreck for your weekend.
Oral catharsis, as I like to call it.
Yeah. Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I'm still playing Shining Force CD, and I'm still kind of intrigued by the ways that they've actually simplified it without actually really dumbing the game down. You can definitely tell that this was meant for a handheld because the maps are, they're smaller, for one thing. And there's no, like, overworld exploration like Shining Force 2 had, and, well, 1 to some degree, but, yeah. It's mostly, like, win a battle, and then you have a menu for your town, which is basically, you know, just heal up and buy stuff and keep going, and then just keep going, and the story is told through, like, cutscenes and stuff. So it's like, it's a very distilled form of Shining Force, and I kind of like it.
Mm-hmm.
But the gameplay is all there. The promotion,
it is really well put together.
Yeah, it really is. And the promotion system seems to be based on Shining Force 2's, which is a good way of going about it, because, yeah, the original one was a little rough. I'm really, really enjoying myself. So apart from that, I've also been doing my SNES Classic stuff. I've been still putting more stuff on there and finding out which games work and which ones don't. Top Gear 3000, even with other retro Arch cores, I can't get that game working at all. So just going to scrap that one. Pretty much everything else I put on there has worked so far. And, you know, Demon's Crest is a really freaking good game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's like kind of a like a Ghouls and Ghosts type game, only like not as hard as balls.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's got that going for it.
Well, actually, wasn't he from Ghouls and Ghosts? Or was he from Ghosts and Goblins?
He was from Ghosts and Goblins.
He was from one of them, because I remember him very clearly.
Mm. Yeah. But, yeah, it's good stuff. So, play that if you haven't. It's one, I think, one of the more underrated SNES games that, you know, is definitely worth checking out.
Just prepare yourself, because it's hard as balls.
Actually, this one isn't hard as balls.
Well, compared to Ghouls and Ghosts, it's not hard as balls.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like, you know, comparing, you know, a brick wall to the fucking Hoover Dam.
Yeah, true. It's, you know, don't get me wrong, it's still a Nintendo game, so games back then were a little bit more difficult than they are today, so you got to deal with that. So, apart from that, well, I've just been watching random YouTube stuff, mostly just science-y, PC, weird content, where people buy old hardware and try to play new games on it. I don't know why this fascinates me, but it does. Apparently,
sometimes it even works.
A lot of the times, shockingly, it actually works. You know, you can get pretty decent graphics cards nowadays for like, you know, $30 to $40 that will actually run, you know, modern games at a pretty decent rate. So
yeah,
if you're willing to buy used, there are some deals to be had out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been looking at that, and also been watching Lewis Rossman's videos, and this week I think the highlight was can a concussed Lewis Rossman fix something that the Apple Genius Bar can't? It turns out, yes, he can. So, that was kind of fun. He was concussed because he basically just fell off his bike. Yeah, that was a bad thing. New York City, and he's going over one of those, you know, those street plates there that are you find all over the place.
Yep.
This one happened to be covered in oil, and he was braking.
Wow.
You can see what happened there. So, yeah, he went flying and, got himself concussed and then did a video and repaired a motherboard. So, it's because what he does. So, Lewis Rossman, if you ever have a chance to watch him on YouTube, he's highly entertaining. What else have I been doing? Oh, yeah, that new Steve Perry single came out. Thanks to you for pointing that out to me.
Yeah, it actually came out last week. But
yeah, I got around to it, to looking at it. So, it's Steve Perry. He 69 years old and still sounds better than 90% of the modern musicians out there.
You can definitely tell that he can't get as high of a range as he used to. But then again, he's also hasn't been making any music since before 2015. So
yeah,
he's been kind of out of the game for 20 plus years.
Yeah, and I like, you know, there's a bit more gravel in his voice, and I like that he just ran with it. So, yeah, it sounds good. I'm going to listen to, well, I'll probably be buying that album when it comes out. So
yeah, for those curious, the album's called Traces. It comes out on October 3rd.
Yeah.
So the single he's referring to is called No Erasing, and it's a pretty, I mean, it's a nice song, but if you've heard about sort of the history of why Steve Perry decided to go back to making music, it's also really melancholy as well.
Yeah.
Because basically his girlfriend died in 20, can't remember what was it 2012 or 2014, something like that. And basically one of her last requests was that he wouldn't isolate himself anymore and that he would go out and do what he does best. And so he decided to go back and start making music again.
Yeah. And what I found kind of interesting is touring with Journey is not off the table.
Yeah. It just, they'd have to, it's just him and Neil Sean would have to learn not to hate each other anymore.
Yeah, that's, that would be a problem.
And they'd have to sort of
catalyst for that.
Yeah.
But they'd also have to rein Jonathan Cain in because he's become kind of a Jesus freak. And
yeah, he was always a little on the crazy side, but now I think the past few years he's gotten way out there.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's kind of been my week. How about you, Pat?
Oh, I've just been continuing to dive into Netflix and look around. I've looked at some of the comedy on there. I've been watching a lot of Trailer Park Boys because that was already a known quantity to me beforehand. I've also looked into Parks and Rec, which explains to me a lot of references that are going around my workplace. So that's been fun. And other than that, I just, I'll find the occasional movie or something that strikes my interest, but I haven't really gone down the rabbit hole yet as far as what I know can be done with Netflix, so I'm sure the full effect is coming.
Yeah. Well, they also have, like, you know, pretty much all of the Fate anime that actually is worth watching is on there. So you got Fate, Stay Night, Unlimited Blade Works, you got Fate Zero, and you have Fate Apocrypha, so...
I need to catch up on that series. Such a good concept, but I'm so behind on it.
Yeah. Yeah, great thing about Netflix is you can watch it anywhere, literally.
Yeah.
So, how about you, Chris?
So I am continuing to watch Parks and Rec. I'm in season 4. Basically, Leslie Knope is in near the end of her campaign for the city council. And it's still great. There are definitely some great moments, especially when you get Chris and Ben sort of mixing with the group as they find like some silly reasons to keep them around, because they're supposed to be there for just basically do audits on the whole Pawnee government, sort of make them leaner as far as spending money and all that. And then they just end up staying. But yeah, that continues to be good. I think the only thing I don't really like is just continue shitting on Jerry every single episode. It's not like they come up with interesting things about it. It's just shit on him because he's either makes weird, he does weird things, or he, you know, flubs a word, or he's overweight or whatever. It's just nothing really that he does that's all that worth being yelled at. Sort of like how Kevin is kind of treated on The Office, but more. Kevin gets a little bit of shit, but it's mostly just letting him show you how stupid he is. And here it's just everybody just shits on him, on Jerry, all the time. And kind of the really funniest bit is in the whole ethics court thing, where he reveals that his name is actually Gary, and that is the boss at that time misspelled his name, and he just rolled with it. Didn't think it was good to bring up a major error like that. So everybody's just flabbergasted and just wants a recess on the court just to deal with it. And that was pretty good. But otherwise, it's been real good. Look forward to watching some more of that. I've also been watching some of Dimitri Martin's specials that are on Netflix, which I have been a fan of his for a long time. Seeing his stuff on Comedy Central back in the day. And for those who might not know him, he primarily focuses on wordplay. Wordplay and puns. So some of the main ways he just plays around with that is either playing some music, and making pun jokes alongside that, or he has drawings.
Yeah.
Those are sort of the two main ways he does it besides just standard stand-up comedy. And so he has two specials that I watched. One that is sort of more just traditional that he, does his stuff, then plays the guitar and harmonica, and does his jokes there. And then he has one that's called The Overthinker, which has a bit more production to it, as he's kind of doing like inner monologue thoughts throughout the whole thing, sort of kind of playing like an anxiety kind of thing, sort of overanalyzing the jokes he's making and all that sort of stuff. But both are really good. And I think the first one, he makes some really good race jokes about how, you know, a black guy that's a magician I'll just get arrested. Because black people can't, when black people make things disappear, they're thieves. Whereas white people are magicians. Make some good jokes about that sort of stuff. Yeah, lots of good comedy on there, so I'm continuing to pick through that and find some of the good ones in there. As for games, Guacamelee 2 is out this week. I've been looking forward to that a good bit, and the story for the sequel kind of came out of left field for me from what I was expecting, but then makes all the sense in the world. So the story is heavily influenced by Rick and Morty. So it begins with you fighting Kalaka, the final boss fight from the first game, as sort of a, hey, this is what you were doing before, because it still heavily influences things going into this game. You beat him. It's a lot easier. The trophy you get when you beat it is like, huh, I remember this being a lot harder the first time. Because he does not do nearly as much damage as he would do in the original fight, and you do a lot more, I think. So you can mess up a lot more. But yeah. After that, they show that, you know, there's peace for a while. You get together with, I think her name is Lupita, the girl that gets kidnapped by Kalaka in the first game. You get married, you have kids, all that sort of stuff. And then you are about to have tacos, and you need guacamole. And so you don't have avocados, so you have to go back to the town and get some avocados. And then all of a sudden, these big weird squares are all over the place, kind of like interdimensional artifacts, I guess. And you find out that there's this thing called the Maxiverse, which is all the other universes. And so Ue Chivos, who's the guy that when you break all the Chuzo statues, he's the goat man that comes out and tells you, you know, what new power you've unlocked. You find out he is kind of the Rick of this universe, is able to travel between dimensions. And there's a good bit there where he's trying to take you to the darkest dimension, but he takes you to the dark dimension, which is, Limbo style. So it's sort of that monochromatic style there for you. Takes you to the next dimension. It's supposed to be the darkest, but ends up going to the baddest dimension. So it's like a beat-em-up looking area with a couple of billboards that references Bad Dudes, Double Dragon, and I think Streets of Rage. I forget what the third one is.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Complete with an NPC that does the president, you must rescue the president thing, to which Chivo's like, no side quest, we don't have time for this. before taking you to the actual darkest timeline, which is sort of just a destroyed version of the town from the original timeline. You find out you're the only one that has survived the fight with Kalaka. He's been killed in all the other universes. And I guess in one of these universes, a guy named Salvador beat him and has kind of decided to become the big baddie. But you also find out there's all these other Ue Chivos, sort of like either the Council of Ricks meet the Council of Ue Chivos. And you got like your cool guy, your hippie guy, you know, all these different kinds, all this sort of stuff. And so now you're tasked with going through... at least this reality. I assume we're going to be going over others since it kind of introduces the whole Mexiverse thing. But so far it's been really quite good. I'm in the first dungeon. Combat's pretty similar. When you upgrade, it's a bit different. Before, it's just as you get money, you can buy the different upgrades. And here they have some of them are tied to, you know, getting a combo 50 or getting combo 50, you know, 10 times. Like, completely different things to open up your ability to buy them. I guess to maybe delay, because you could, if you could grind, you could get all those abilities or the upgrades earlier in the original. So this is sort of spreading them out a little bit. But other than that, it's combat's pretty similar. They added, they have all new enemies, so there's more challenging stuff there, and more like challenge rooms centered around, you know, testing out your mastery of the combat, which can get quite hard. But yeah, a lot of the stuff that you probably saw in one of the trailers of like these dimensional waves happening on the levels, that's all in the first dimension. So to make like platforms go in and out, that sort of stuff. As long as you stay in tune with the like the waves that are going across the screen. And then I hit a bug where I was trying to go wall jump up to the next screen and nothing happened. And I was like, okay, this is where I'm done for today.
Well, that's broken.
Yeah. I did also have a weird bug when you get the mask. I didn't get the trophy. So I had to start up another save just to go get to the mask. And then it unlocked. So I got a trophy for the mask. It's 2 days after everything else. One that has like 90% completed from what everybody else is doing. It's like, yeah, this I should have probably gotten this unless I messed something up with the mask. It's like, nope, it's a cutscene. It just has you take the mask. So yeah, that's two little small bugs, but otherwise really good so far. Been playing more Chasm. I'm in kind of a... I'm in the keep, which is one of the areas where you get the sliding move. I'm working my way through that, taking down some tough enemies. And I unlocked a new battle axe, which is sort of the same as the claymore, just an axe, but also like 5 damage points better. So I do 50 points of damage versus 45, but still liking that game a lot. But now I'm kind of in a point where I just go down this hallway where there are like 3 tough enemies. There's like a, like the D&D style, like a big slime cube with like a bunch of dead enemies in him. That one's tough because he will just lunge at you after you try to attack him. So a lot of the way of getting around enemy attacks that I have like stubbornly learned is jump over them. So often lunge without doing too much of a vertical attack. So that's sort of a thing that I get in trouble with and die because I'm stupidly trying to figure out better ways to beat them than just jump over them when they try to jump at you. Yeah, there's like a an animated armor set that's just doing attacks. You can't jump over him, so that's where some of that stubbornness comes into play, which just ends up you trying to jump in, get a couple attacks, jump out as you're dodging the attack he's going to do. Then a spider that drops down, sort of Castlevania style, drops down, shoots a web at you. I like that one because I just keep running past it, and it'll follow me and then just run into a part of the ceiling that it can't get past. Then I can just jump up and hit it. Can't attack me any. Because you can see its sprite is furiously trying to keep moving over towards me because it's, I guess its program is probably telling it to go right above me. But I can't because there's a just a little bit of room. So I can just exploit that and get easy kills on the spider. Doesn't really work so well the other direction in some of the other rooms, but that Chasm's still been a nice little game to at least play until I get frustrated and then quit. I've also been playing Hollow Knight on the Switch, which has a sale on now. It's $10 instead of $15. Because they just put out their big update. I think it's supposed to be their big final update, content update at least. I've been working my way through that. And trying to get some good upgrades, because I think I'm missing something so I can get the map for the next area I have, because that game, you don't fill in your map just by exploring. You have to go find a specific map maker who will give you the map for the area you're in, and then you can start filling it in. So that is a little frustrating. He's hiding behind something that I can't get past. It's like this black laser thing that hurts really bad when you're trying to do anything to it. So I need to explore some more and figure out what I can do about that. But I did find a bank so you can save your money. Because every time you die, it's sort of Dark Souls style where you leave like a ghost. Actually, you have to go kill, go back and find and kill. Sort of a, it's only like 2 hits you need, but it can be kind of annoying if you get into a hard area.
Yeah.
But now I can just save most of my money. Because I got a nice upgrade where, because the money when you kill an enemy, it just explodes all over the place.
Yeah.
So it can be kind of annoying trying to go get it. So I have one that just has these like little bugs that picks it up and brings it to you. Hmm. Like, oh, I can just kill at all times and not worry about losing the money. Especially when it falls into like liquid and spikes that you can't get to. But yeah, that's been good and kind of just doing all of the Metroid likes.
Hmm.
Most of them at least. How about you, Brandon?
All right, well, first and foremost, I am still playing Octopath. I have officially finished both Primrose's and Ophelia's Chapter 4s. God, and man, Ophelia's in particular was a freaking... That was a gauntlet. But I eventually figured out that, you know, that reflecting veil ability is a fucking godsend, because as long as you manage to spam it, you can basically reflect all their major elemental attacks back at them.
Yeah.
It's also, I'd finished that. I'm now trying to decide which ones I want to do next. Because I'm thinking maybe I'll try Cyrus's, but I tried it once and I was basically mutilated within under a minute, because that particular boss, when you first go up against her, has a really high shield point. So you have to hit her weaknesses like a bunch of times, and all the while she can hit you with these really major damaging spells. And I also tried Hanitz, or however you want to pronounce that. It went up against Red Eye, and holy shit, Red Eye is just pure nightmare fuel. Seriously, it is terrifying to behold. And it also, of course, it has that fun little petrify ability that can, on top of petrifying you, it can also take your entire party out of commission for a turn or two. So that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I'm probably going to have to maybe do a little bit more grinding. I'd also considered maybe going to pursue some of the secret jobs at the shrines you can get to. But those things are like level 50 and above. So... May have to put the kibosh on that one for a little bit.
Where are you at right now?
The highest one, highest level I've got is Primrose right now, and she's 54. And I've also got Ulbrich, and he's around 52. All the other ones are around 49 or below. That I've been playing. Tressa and Alfin are still in the late 20s, so. Gonna have to go back and work on that. But other than that, I've also been playing Death's Gambit. Like I said, I'm still doing it for review. It's the Dark Souls of Dark Souls clones, I think is how Jim Sterling described it, and it's a pretty accurate description. It's 2D pixelated Dark Souls. And there's a lot of, direct references to Dark Souls as far as, humor and stuff is concerned. Oh, yeah, did I mention this game is also darkly funny in a lot of ways?
No, but I did get that sense by watching it.
Let's see. Oh, yeah, there's a... one of the neat things about this game that I actually like, that I actually makes it... actually has won over Dark Souls... that Dark Souls doesn't have. Obviously, being a Dark Souls clone, you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. But the best part about this game is when you die, every so often you'll sort of get a small bit of your character's backstory. Usually or they might have a vision of the afterlife or something. Or, and then on that one occasion where he, where the character has a dream about, you know, when he was a child again, and then walks back into his house and then notices that, Death is there, in an apron cooking breakfast. Because why not?
Nice.
Oh yeah, Death in this game is a real snarker.
Yeah.
Other than that, books, as usual. Still reading Jin Yang's A Hero Born. Long-ass book. It's like 400-something pages. Good thing it's illustrated. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, the floor is no longer lava.
Mm.
At least for the time being. It got down to around 84.
Mm.
That's actually cool. You know, where I am, considering... Yeah. It's gotten as high as 96. So, yeah, I've actually been able to go outside and walk some.
Yeah.
Exercise.
Yeah, we've had some rain this week.
Yeah, I was fixing to say it was with brief things of us having to deal with rain because it rained off and on for like the whole week.
Yeah. We were a bit luckier because we got down in the 70s.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, this is what summer should feel like.
Yeah, it's like, you know,
like it's really nice. You want to go outside. You're not sweating within seconds.
Yeah, you can breathe.
Hmm.
Yeah, because at this point I've been reduced to, like, watching, you know, riff tracks, like old crazy Christmas movies, so I could remember what it felt like to be cool.
Feels less like a toaster oven outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that's pretty much... Oh, other than that, yeah, I've been doing my education stuff. You know, I'm doing that every week now. I'm now into the medical terminology course.
Or the brain
melting part of it. That's going to be fun. Yeah, I got, like, a big, like, 1,000-plus page textbook right here with me. It's a lot of shit to cover. But, other than that, that's pretty much it. So anybody got anything else they want to add?
No, I'm good.
Okay, well, it is now time once again for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today, I want to talk to you a little bit about something that up until around the middle of World War II was basically an epidemic that we used to have down here in the South. It was... It had a lot of names. People sickness. They called it the crazies. They called it the Reds. It had a lot of names. But what it ultimately was a disease called pellagra. Now, pellagra is a very, if you actually manage to develop it, it's a pretty nasty disease. You get inflamed red patches on your skin, sores in the mouth, you develop diarrhea, dizziness, even dementia. People would, like, get up in the middle of the night with a knife hunting, you know, invisible people that weren't really there.
Hmm.
And then once fall came around, the disease disappeared. And for the longest time, nobody was sure why.
Hmm.
But, like, let me give you an example. Here's a picture from Wikipedia from back in that era of a guy who was suffering from it. A relatively old guy.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's not a pretty picture.
Nope.
And it was epidemic levels. It got to the point where pretty much, like, every 1 in 10 people would start developing it. Down here in the South. It was pretty bad.
Hmm.
And it took many years before people were finally able to figure out, why was it that people kept getting this disease? Where did it come from? Why did it disappear once the weather cooled down? You know? And so what happened is that this guy from New York by the name of Dr. Joseph Goldberger, he had become fascinated with the disease back when he was working during a flu epidemic in Mississippi. And he started to notice that every spring and summer, all of these people would start developing this weird disease. And he was really he was stumped about why it would happen. And the thing is, most of the medical world was too, because a lot of people actually thought it was germ related, that it was, you know, you could, that it was a communicable disease. And that was actually a fairly common belief, which is why a lot of pellagra patients would be isolated for months at a time. But because of the fact that the disease was specifically targeted poor working class Southerners rather than the richer Southerners, and basically came and went with the seasons, he became convinced that it was something else besides germs. He thought it might actually be diet related. Basically, he looked at what the diet of your average poor Southerner at the time was. And I'm going to be frank with you, they didn't eat very well back then. Basically, their entire diets back then revolved around cornmeal, molasses, and fatback bacon. Now, fatback bacon is pretty tasty, but it's basically all fat. So it has very little actually nutrients in it. At most, the vegetables they could afford would be like canned vegetables if they were lucky. And so he looked at this and he was able to sort of give this idea, and he was able to eventually, he did a couple of experiments that he was able to prove this. So like, for first of all, he went to a health asylum, and he noticed that in this health asylum, all of the bigwigs and officials for the building, they got the first choice of all the foods, whereas the patients and lower would get sort of the leftovers. Again, cornmeal, molasses, fatback bacon, canned vegetables. And so he had this idea. Maybe you can actually, let's see, what if we gave we gave the lower ones something, served them some leaner meats, a glass of milk, some eggs, and some fresher vegetables. And guess what? Only a handful of them developed pellagra. He's like, okay. So maybe if you can do it, you can also induce it. So he came up with an idea. So he went to Georgia, yes, my home state, and he went to a prison. And he got the warden of this prison to agree to let about a dozen or so inmates be able to commute their sentence if they would participate in this guy's experiment. And so what he did is he took them, isolated them in a barn out in the middle of a field, and half of them he fed, you know, lean meats, vegetables, eggs, glass of milk, and the others he gave the three basics, you know, cornmeal, molasses, fatback, bacon. Obviously, as you can probably tell, even by that day, it was probably very unethical, but it worked. He was able to induce it into the ones with the poorer diet. But he had two issues that he still had to overcome. The first one was finally convincing everyone that it was not germ-related. So in order to do that, he came up with probably one of the most brilliant publicity stunts in the world. He put on a filth party. What is a filth party? He would have people sneeze on each other, cough with each other. He would have pellagra patients, and he would, like, swab the back of their throats or, you know, take samples from their noses or their mouths. And then they would take those samples and they would, you know, rub the swabs on the back of their throats and put the samples on their noses and their mouths. Yeah, it's very unsanitary, I know. And then finally, the big one, the coup de grace of the whole thing, he would take samples of pellagra patients of their fecal matter, urine, and some of the blood and scabs from their scabby parts that they developed, put it into a pill, and then had everyone and his assistant and his colleagues swallow the pill. And nobody got pellagra. Oh, they got diarrhea, sure, because holy shit, that last part.
I'm just saying, yeah. Probably got something else.
And then, finally, he had one last big sort of obstacle he had to overcome. The rich Southern planters. Because if it proved, because here's the thing you got to remember. You're probably wondering, wait, these folks are all in the South, right? And the South is kind of a very agrarian place. So wouldn't most of these people actually have easy access to fruits and vegetables? Well, not back then, because back then the primary, pretty much only crop that they grew in mass back then was still cotton. And back then, all of the people who worked those cotton fields were sharecroppers, poor whites, and immigrants. By the way, take a wild guess what the racial makeup was of a lot of those sharecroppers. You got three guesses, and the first two don't count.
Yeah, should probably go without saying, but black.
So, as you can guess, they thought that they thought of it as an affront to their Southern honor. Because it would mean the system was in question. We can't have that. So he had a bunch of, like, freaking, you know, big planners and their lobbyists, people who worked for him, trying to put up a united front against him. So eventually, finally, he had to come up with, like, something he could do to actually make pellagra no longer a thing, like a cheap cure. Because the cure he wanted to use was way too expensive. Because as you can imagine, eventually he realized that this was all diet related and probably with the type of stuff they weren't getting. But, you know, his original solution was far too expensive. So he decided to do another experiment. This time he did it with dogs. Now, dogs can actually catch a form of pellagra. It's called black tongue. And it's basically exactly what it sounds like. It's a big black splotch on the tongue. And so he came with the idea. He's like, okay, why don't I'm going to try and feed the dogs cornmeal? Okay. But the dogs wouldn't take it because, you know, it's cornmeal. Dogs won't just eat cornmeal. It's, you know, they're not stupid. So he's like, okay, fine. I got to do something to flavor it. So he added in some, he came up with the idea of flavoring it with some leftover yeast extract from one of the local brewers. And so he poured some of that, added it in into the meal, and guess what? They ate it. But here's the thing. They didn't develop black tongue. He's like, wait, so hold on. So basically what he then did instead was he gave them cornmeal again, but this time he sprinkled in some sugar. And this time they still ate the cornmeal, but they developed black tongue. And that's when it finally hit him. Wait, was it the brewer's yeast he kept the black tongue? And it turns out he was right. He found out finally what it was that was causing pellagra. It was a lack of niacin. Now, if you look at any like a box of crackers or any kind of cornmeal or something, if you're cooking and you look at the box of ingredients, you'll notice that there's niacin in it. Yeah. Well, this is why. He discovered that if you added niacin, vitamin B3, to all of this stuff, pellagra would not happen. And unfortunately, it didn't happen until he would pass away, because unfortunately, he died of cancer in, I think it was the 1930s. But his colleagues kept on his work, and eventually, by the time World War II came around, they were able to convince the U.S. government to enrich all of their breads and crackers and stuff with niacin. And ever since then, the last known pellagra case in the United States in the South was in the 1950s. It has never been out again. And it's all because people just had a really shitty diet. And now you're probably also wondering, okay, so they finally got this done, but, you know, the crop, the cotton crop thing, like, how is that? You know, it's like, you know, cotton isn't as big a thing in the South as it used to be. Is this related to it? Well, yes and no. Back in the 1930s, the Mississippi River flooded, And it wrecked a lot of the local crop, of the cotton crops that year. And so they were basically all forced to diversify their crops with fruits and vegetables. That's why fruits and vegetables are, fresh fruits and vegetables are a bit easier to come by here in the South now. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid.
So it sounds like he kind of inadvertently invented the vitamin supplement.
Pretty much, yeah. You also notice folks in Australia have not ever had to deal with pellagra because of Vegemite.
Yeah.
Which is also made from brewer's yeast extract.
Yeah.
But all right. Okay, it is now time for the show proper, and as always, we got to start with our asshole of the week. No, it's not Trump. We got a whole section for him later on. No, our asshole of the week is the health chief of the state of Michigan, because this week they're going on trial over the Flint water crisis.
Yep. So, they had, I think, see, District Judge David Goggins made the announcement earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
After delaying it a few weeks ago over this case about the Flint water crisis, and basically said the defense's arguments that he should not have been bound over on the charges was just not enough to overcome the prosecutor in this matter to show probable cause that the crimes were committed and needed to go to trial.
Mm-hmm.
So judge basically said, yeah, we're going to need you to go to trial because you're complicit in all this.
Yeah, it's...
I do find based on upon the totality of all the evidence, I find this behavior over this time, period of withholding information, corrupt based upon misconduct in office,
mm-hmm.
or probable cause standards. Yeah, he decided, so this is Nick Lyon, Lyon, that he willfully and neglectfully refused to protect the lives of two Flint area men who purportedly died from Legionnaires by failing to act too appropriately with regard to disseminating notices to the public. So taking too long to get word out that the water needed to be boiled and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, by the way, there's still the Flint water crisis is still ongoing. They are still having issues with lead in the water. I mean, there's been progress made, but not nearly enough.
Yeah, so about 12 people died due to the Legionnaires' disease outbreak, and 79 other people got sick as a result. And Lyon obviously had, Lyon had the ability to know how many Legionnaires' disease deaths were. They were in Flint area and has the power as the state's health chief to protect lives and enforce laws to that end. And yeah, so he just tried to hide this information from people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sounds like a real scumbag.
Yeah, I hope he goes away to prison for decades. He fucking deserves it. I mean, he was that derelict in his duty as health chief of the state of Michigan.
And I guess the mayor, or no, the governor, Rick Snyder, is defending him.
Of course he is, because he's about as complicit in it as he is.
Yeah. They're saying, like every other person who is charged with a crime, you should be presumed innocent unless and until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. It's like,
and you know what? That would be all well and good, but the evidence is all fucking around you.
Yeah. It's like, that's the thing you only say when you are looking pretty guilty.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fine principle, and it's true, but, again, you just need to go down to Flint and look around.
Yeah.
It's fucking there.
Yeah, it's not hard to see.
But, yeah, I hope he goes to trial, and I hope they put him away and throw away the goddamn key.
Yep.
Because...
sell over in cell block D.
Yeah. And understand, that lead shit... You know, there are kids whose physical and mental growth is permanently damaged because of that shit.
Yeah.
Just think about that.
Yeah.
But while you're thinking about that, you can also be rest assured in the fact that, yes, there still is good in the world because of our Heroes of the Week. Our Heroes of the Week are the students of UNC, of the University of North Carolina, who finally did what their bullshit afraid city council simply wouldn't do, even though they had resolutely and by majority told them that this is what needs to happen, that we want this to happen. They wouldn't do it because they're a bunch of pansies. So the UN students went over and they finally toppled the statue of Silent Sam.
Yep. And they did it in a pretty interesting way by essentially creating the distraction nearby.
Yeah.
Allowing them to set up, the outwitted officers with coordinated tactics started with the raising of four tall black banners on bamboo poles, along with more banners on the ground, concealing efforts to tie a rope around the statue.
That's fucking brilliant.
They then split into two groups, with most marching away from the statue to distract from a small group remaining behind. The banners were up for about an hour before the groups converged and yanked the statue down. So that thing has been up since 1913.
Yeah.
Erected by the United Daughters of the Confederacy, who I'm sure were really concerned about the Confederates.
Oh, no, they weren't. Yeah, it was entirely about white supremacy.
Yeah.
Like, the guy who gave especially the dedication didn't even fucking hide it.
Yeah, especially at a college. Reminds any black students, you know, where they stood.
Mm-hmm.
But also, part of this is that the UNC leaders spoke out against this whole thing happening, basically saying the safety and security of our students, faculty, and staff is paramount, and the actions last night were unacceptable, dangerous, and incomprehensible. We are a nation of laws and mob rule, and the intentional destruction of public property will not be tolerated. Which is like basically saying, we don't like what you did because you guys could have gotten hurt. Like, basically, really not trying to make any sort of political statement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's always these mealy-mouthed bureaucrats that, you know, show themselves afterwards.
Yeah. But anybody who's got any local Confederate statues, I would suggest you study their example because they fucking coordinated the shit out of this.
Yeah.
Like, that is...
their students.
Mm-hmm.
Probably learned in class ways to protest well.
Yeah. And
one of the things I saw recently is that when all the hubbub about Confederate statues started going on, we have more now in this country than at that point.
Yeah. People they started going up right around the 50s.
Mm. I mean, in the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
They took down less than that have been put back up.
Mm.
Or put up in total. It's like,
no. Targets.
Yeah. Just a little bit more work. Mm. But the work has to be done.
Yep.
So yeah, fuck that statue. And I'm glad it's gone. And, you know, you can just sit there and fucking whine about it.
Yeah.
It's not gonna Ain't nothing up. You can do that's going to bring it back.
Yep.
He's gone.
And no history is being removed.
No.
Because it's all still history. Everything has been written down. You can go to museums if you want as well.
Mm.
And nobody's losing any bit of history because a statue about something fell down.
Mm-hmm. Also, the statue was really made really fucking cheap. So, it came down without very much effort. So,
yeah. There's one that happened a couple years ago where it just kind of bent.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't made of solid, like, metal. It was something that was malleable enough that when they tried to pull it down, it just bent over.
Mm-hmm. But,
yeah.
All right, well, now we're going to go on and start the proper show. And we have to, of course, start with a little segment we're calling the Trump Dump. The Trump Dump. And,
yeah, there's a lot of stories here, but it's really just one story.
Yeah, it's one story separated over about six different sections because all this shit happened within hours of each other. So first we need to start with everybody's favorite says who fixer, Michael Cohen. He is currently being – he was under investigation. He's now under investigation for bank fraud that exceeds $20 million.
Yep.
That's a lot of fucking money.
Yep. More than $20 million in loans to a taxi company he owns with his family.
Yeah, the medallion scam they were running.
Yep. I said authorities are additionally looking into whether the former fixer broke any laws by arranging financial deals with women. Okay, this is the thing that we'll be talking about next.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he's got other stuff going on besides just what's going on next.
Yeah, that's tell me you know the first time he showed up in CNN, you're thinking, this dude's got a lot of skeletons in the closet.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, he just fucking looks and acts shifty.
Yeah.
But it doesn't end there, because guess what? He has accepted a plea deal and pled guilty on campaign finance violations, and he implicated his former boss, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
By the way, this is for the money for trying to give hush money to the women who had affairs. So yeah. He had affairs with.
Yep. And yeah, so Trump isn't named in it, but they keep referring to candidate.
Yeah, and it's like, we know who he's talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which prompted Trump to tweet out, if you're looking for a lawyer, don't use Michael Cohen because he's going to fucking jail.
Yeah.
You don't hire a lawyer that's in jail. Mm. Pretty sure that's a good rule.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and so, yeah, this is all dealing with Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal. And kind of also in response to this, Trump and his people are saying, you can't indict a president. You can't indict a president.
Like, actually, you can.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, and also, it seems like something's going to happen this fall that's going to make it a lot easier for them not to have to deal with the president.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it doesn't end there. Doesn't end there, because then he got subpoenaed for a Trump Foundation probe.
By New York.
And see, this is a state charges, so he can't get pardoned for these.
Yeah. And I think he's also said he doesn't want to be pardoned. He wouldn't accept.
Yeah, his attorney basically went out and said, like, he is not going to accept any pardon from President Trump.
Yeah.
Because he thinks he's a crook.
Smart. Yeah.
He's tired of being the fixer.
Yeah.
You would think Trump would want to be nice as possible because he knows a lot of shit about you.
Oh, he's got so much dirt.
Yeah.
And he's got a lot of it on tape.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's also just ironic that the Trump Foundation is being investigated for legal trouble faster than, let's say, the Clinton Foundation.
Yeah.
That constantly got shit over the entire election season. For things that didn't, or either just things that looked bad but weren't that bad, or things that had nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and keep in mind, the Trump Foundation is Trump's baby.
Hmm.
Yeah, used lots of its money on bullshit. Like giant paintings of himself. They were supposed to go to charity, but we're sitting in a Trump restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have an ego problem at all.
No, but we still got some more, because the other major figure out of this was Paul Manafort, his former campaign manager.
Yep.
And he was convicted on 8 counts of fraud.
Yeah, 8 of the 18, the jury was deliberating.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 of those were 11-1 in terms of the jury.
Yeah.
So they ended up being mistrialed. So yeah, we have 5 counts of tax fraud, guilty, 2 counts of bank fraud, guilty, 1 count failure to disclose foreign bank account, guilty, and then the other 10, no consensus.
Yep. Well, no consensus being, you know, like 10-1, like 11-1.
Yeah.
There was that one holdout.
And I think right now what he's been convicted of, it's up to 80 years, I think,
mm-hmm.
in prison. So for the rest of his life,
yeah.
if he gets the full amount.
Yeah, but
I think he's still got some more stuff, more trials to go through.
yeah.
So yeah, this witch hunt, it's got people pleading guilty. Big and small people. Witch hunts have nothing that happens.
Yeah,
that's why they're called witch hunts, because people thought witches were real.
Yeah.
And they killed a bunch of innocent women.
Yeah. But that's not what's happening here.
Nope.
A bunch of corrupt idiots are getting exposed.
People who don't know how to cover up anything.
Yeah.
Anchoring other people don't know how to cover up anything. And now they're all going to jail.
Yeah. And then finally, and we got two more from the Trump dump, as we're calling it. Duncan Hunter and his wife. Duncan Hunter is a Republican. Is he a congressman or a representative?
Yeah, he's in the House of Representatives.
House of Representatives.
By California.
In California. And big supporter.
Yep.
Of
was
the
one
president.
Of the early congressional people supporting him.
And now they found that he pissed away so much of the campaign funds on just the stupidest shit.
Yep.
He used like thousands of dollars for just getting games on Steam.
Yeah, that he said his son had stolen.
Yeah.
Yeah, so lots of pissing away of money. And as of, I think, yesterday, he blamed it on his wife. Said she handled all the finances. Oh, that's real good for the family life.
That's great for the marriage.
Yeah.
She did it.
Yeah. So, yeah, they had, let's see, the Hunters overdrew their personal bank accounts more than 1,100 times in a 7-year period, which I don't know how you have a bank account when you're doing it that much. See, resulting in $37,000 in overdraft and insufficient funds bank fees. I guess just because they were making money off of these people.
Probably.
But, yeah, I'm not sure if they have a mount yet on how much. But they do have a decent list here. Let's see, a 2015 family vacation in Italy over Thanksgiving, over $14,000. An April vacation in Hawaii costing $6,500. And a $3,700 trip to Las Vegas and Boise in July 2015. Mm. Which, that's always the traditional trip, is Las Vegas and Boise. yeah, see, purchases for personal items at Costco, $11,300. Jeez. Walmart, more than $5,700. They also have Barnes & Noble, Target, Michael's, Craft Store stuff as well.
Mm.
No prices on that. Let's see. The wife spent more than $300 in campaign funds for, quote, a tablecloth, 3 square pillows, a 3-brush set, a metal tray, 4 temporary shades, 4 window panels, a white duck, 2 Punky Brewster items, a ring pop, and 2 5-packs of animals. That's at the Target. She described the purchase as being needed for teacher slash parent and supporter events. Yeah, so, for example, Hunter's allegedly spent $2,000 on a November 2010 birthday gift for a family member to attend a Pittsburgh Steelers game at Heinz Field.
Mm-hmm.
Questioned by his treasurer about whether the expense was campaign-related, Congressman gave a curt response, yes, sir. yeah, so... when the treasurer explicitly told the congressman in December 2010 that he could not use campaign funds, quote, for a leisure outing at which the discussion occasionally focuses on the campaign, Hunter asked the treasurer if he was, quote, trying to create some kind of paper trail on him.
Mm.
When the treasurer threatened to resign, Hunter promised that he would instruct his wife not to use a campaign credit card and put it in a safe place. And, yeah, so they failed at that pretty bad.
Yeah, it's like, you know, we don't care what you spend your money on, but if it's campaign funds, that kind of comes out after a while.
Yeah.
So, yeah, great,
I think
great
this
job,
guy's also infamous for vaping in Congress.
Yeah, he vapes when he's on committees. It's
so, if you want to know what kind of asshole he is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So... great.
All right.
And I guess he is still going to be appearing on in the election for this.
Yeah, because he hasn't resigned.
Yeah.
That, and it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A judge would have to remove him.
Yeah.
And there's no trial just yet.
at this point. I don't think he's winning.
So probably going to go to the Democrat. If we're lucky. I'm sure there could be some bullshit where they vote
for anyone. This is California we're talking about. And I know that when people think California, they think bastion of liberal progressivism. But you get down into the desert areas. Yeah, you get out into the desert areas, and it's crazy hillbillies as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, I think this is outside of San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, anyways.
But finally, our last story for the Trump Dump. So Trump is buddies with a guy named David Pecker. David Pecker is the owner of the National Enquirer, which is like one of the most infamous tabloidy papers you can get in the United States. And one of the things that David Pecker likes to do that is sort of his practice is what he calls catch and kill, which is when he'll buy up a very scandalous story, the right to publish a very scandalous story for somebody he knows or likes, and then just buries the lead. He just buries it so nobody will publish it. Well, today he officially flipped on President Trump, and now he's talking to the special counsel, Robert Mueller. So we can finally say on air that Mueller has grabbed Trump by the pecker.
Oh, God.
The jokes just write themselves.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think this guy also had like a safe that he kept it, all the potential stories they could have used. It's like all the secret information. He has like a literal safe full of these deals and such they had.
Yep. Yeah, it's true.
So there might be some even more juicy stuff in there.
Oh, yes, there are.
I want to say the Karen McDougal thing was going to go through the National Enquirer.
Yeah, not a good week for the Trump admin this week.
Nope.
That's why he gets going worse. Nuts on Twitter one week.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he always goes nuts on Twitter.
But he woke up, like, at one point, he woke up at, like, 1 something in the morning and just briefly, and for whatever reason, just decided to tweet, "No collusion, witch hunt," and then went back to sleep.
I think somebody joked that he should just pin that on his account so he doesn't have to keep doing that.
Well, moving on now to other topics.
Yeah, Elizabeth, and kind of just to interject a little bit, like somehow this all makes what's going on in Australia seem normal. Which they just got a new prime minister for. I would say somebody said it's been over 10 years since they last had a prime minister that finished a full term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they all do stupid shit and get themselves.
Malcolm Turnbull. He's the guy who got kicked out. He basically had received a petition that showed he had completely lost support of his party. So
one of his buddies just took the job from him.
And he's actually worse than he is. But it's pretty much guaranteeing them having a Labor government next year.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what my Australian friends are telling me. But anyway, moving on. Next story. It involves Senator Elizabeth Warren, a famous sort of progressive firebrand who has started putting out a new bit of reform legislation where she's basically attempting to curtail and propose ways to curtail all of the rampant corruption that's happening in American politics.
And one of them is banning members of Congress and the White House staff from owning individual stocks. Be pretty good.
That would help.
Like banning them from buying them and having to sell them if they go into Congress with them. Because as we know from the president, that he is so invested in so many businesses that there's no way to ensure that he is not violating any sort of emoluments clauses.
Which he is.
Yeah, because he goes to his golf clubs all the time. I think there's a couple others here. Like one would ban them from lobbying after they're done.
Yeah, that's a big one.
I think Trump said he was going to do that, but that never happened.
No.
Yeah, that drain in the swamp really went well. Yeah, let's see. Lifetime ban on lobbying for presidents and federal lawmakers. Would bar U.S. lobbyists from using foreign cash to affect American policy. And let's see, slap new taxes on excessive lobbying of more than $500,000 a year. Would bind Supreme Court justices to a code of conduct recognized by other federal judges. And yeah, the measure require presidential candidates to share years of previous tax returns, continue doing so every year if they win.
That one's directly aimed at him.
But yeah, this is not obviously not going to go through.
Of course not.
Nope.
Because it's sensible legislation.
Yeah, and this is probably, is what most people surmise, is probably either going for waiting for the blue wave to happen or for a potential presidential run in 2020.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't count on it getting much further, even if the blue wave happens.
Yeah. Because I think we had a bipartisan bill about securing the elections as far as, like, against hacks.
Yeah.
And that got up to the White House. Or no, that got into the Senate. It was about to get put up for a vote, come out of committee and get put up for a vote in the White House, had it shot down.
Yep.
Yeah, because, you know, why would you want secure elections when it's working so well in your favor?
You know, essentially appoints, I think, one person in each state's election committee essentially in charge of being alerted if, say, foreign governments were trying to hack in. Like, be able to get sort of quick word that something was going to happen so they could, you know, find ways to either counteract it or you know, take other measures.
Yeah, it's bad.
Very.
Yeah, there was. Did you see the stuff that happened the couple of weeks back at I think it was at DEF CON? They had the voting machine hacking village.
And the dude who did it was like 11 years old.
Well, there was the 11-year-old kid who hacked a replica of the of a State Department website and changed the voting results on there.
So
that was great. And then there was the woman that hacked a voting machine that's currently still being used in 18 states and did it in 2 minutes with no tools.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can do it while you're in the booth.
I think there's some company that is in charge of the software for a number of voting booths that has people that worked in Russia.
Yeah.
At the on their board.
Surprised.
It's like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
So. By the way, this is actually going to kind of tie into our next story. Those voting machines. So in Randolph County, in my home state of Georgia, officials have had to scrap plan to close most of the polling places over there over ADA issues. The ADA, by the way, is just their cover.
Yeah. It's the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Because apparently these places didn't have, like, wheelchair ramps to their specifications. But mostly it's because these are in a mostly black part of the county. Because
people challenge them to, you know, present the studies and all that. And they're like, we didn't do anything.
Yeah.
It's like, oh. These people are bolder than usual. Because most people, they're trying to show that they're doing these things for racist reasons.
Yeah.
Usually try to at least throw some bureaucracy in it to make it less obvious. But these guys are just like, yeah, we didn't have any formal study done to determine this. We think that's what they should do. Because I guess the Department of Justice is actively working to... Yeah. Get people to use the ADA as the reason to potentially shut down a bunch of polling places.
Yeah. By the way, I need to point this out. We don't have paper ballots in Georgia.
No, wasn't there a district near you that had a shocking amount of voter turnout at one point? They had like 267% voter turnout. They had like 600 votes for 200 some registered voters.
Yeah.
That's a problem, I think.
And also, here's another thing you probably don't know. It is a real bitch to get an absentee ballot here in Georgia as well.
And because make it real easy.
Yeah, you basically have to prove that you have a very specific reason. And even then, they still can decide to not give it to you.
Yeah.
Just for no freaking reason.
Yeah.
And people wonder why our politics in Georgia suck so much. But hopefully that's all going to change soon with our next governor.
Yeah.
For those of you don't know, here in Georgia, our governor is the Republican's going to be Brian Kemp. Yeah, he's the guy with the infamous illegals bus that he kept driving around.
Yep.
And his opponent, Democrat, is Stacey Abrams, who is an educated woman, educator, and best-selling author. She's also the first, not only the first, she would not only be the first black woman in America's history to become governor, she would be our first black governor in Georgia.
That is saying something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
But, again, we're going to see what happens because, like I said, we got all these shenanigans with our voting machines and, just, you know, cross your fingers, I guess.
Yeah. So, yeah, this next one is a little kind of sad, but, well, we kind of saw it coming.
Yeah, Senator John McCain has officially announced that he is stopping his brain cancer treatment. Yeah. Apparently he's just at a point now where he's just ready to die.
Yeah, where I assume the chances of it going perfectly is not worth it.
Yeah, apparently, I guess it's at a point now where just continuing the treatment really wouldn't be effective.
Yeah.
Remember, this is like getting brain cancer treatments is, I mean, cancer treatment in general is pretty heinous already, but brain cancer in particular is especially so. But, yeah, it's sad. He's going to kind of leave behind a bit of a mixed legacy. But,
yeah.
I'm wondering
if he starts talking and starts doing interviews at this point and starts burning things down.
I honestly wouldn't blame him if he decided to do that. I mean, he's at a point now where he doesn't really have to, he really has nothing to lose now.
Yeah.
Though this announcement went through his daughter's. Media people, so I think he might be just
in might be in hospice now, and
yeah,
he might just be letting his kids handle things for him.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he's got something that he wrote up for after he does pass away.
Yeah,
and he just sort of, it'll just be a giant takedown of everyone he ever hated.
Probably,
because I know that's what I would do.
Yeah.
Okay, this one is in particular, it's from Spokane, Washington. Apparently, the residents of Spokane, they created a Facebook event so that they could use fans to start blowing some of the smoke back to Canada.
Yeah, so there's a big wildfire in British Columbia. The winds have caused that to go south, particularly over Washington State. And which is great to have PAX over there in Seattle. As a lot of people might not be able to go out as much as they might want. But yeah, I guess one guy in Spokane, Caleb Moon, organized his event called Blow Spokane Smoke Away to Canada to take place today at noon. I assume it did not go well. basically asking everybody in Spokane, it's about 550,000 people, to place at least 5 box fans on the roofs. And that would and turn them to the highest settings and aim them at northeastern Canada.
Okay.
Which, it's not going to do anything.
No.
That's not how...
I live in northeastern Canada. I didn't see anything, so...
Yeah, and... Also, how you're going to figure out what northeastern Canada, put your box fans on your roof and somehow turn them that way.
Yes.
If you have anything like a slanted roof.
Mm. Yeah. Also, box fans don't blow as much air as wind currents do.
No.
So,
But it seems like he's very much serious about this. teamwork makes the dream work. Let's do the Spokenites. We figure a small box fan can move smoke about 6 feet. So if you put 500,000 of them together, you can do the math on that. We can probably get it pretty far into Canada, which that's not how it works.
Nope.
It would push it about 6 feet by your math. It would just be 500,000 fans worth of smoke pushed a little
bit. 6 feet ahead of the last box fan.
Yeah. It doesn't add up. It doesn't get exponential.
Nope.
That's not how wind works or fans.
Mm.
Despite
the fact that this wouldn't work, I kind of really, really, really wish they would have been able to do it. The ridiculousness.
Just to see how it looks.
Yeah.
So I guess somebody at the British Columbia Center for Disease Control responded about this when asked.
Yeah.
One sort of floor fan could move a little smoke around. There's no way the large group of fans is going to move as much smoke as there actually is.
Mm.
If you've got a fan running on your floor, think of its radius of influence. It's not very large, maybe 10 feet. So all it's going to do is clear smoke maybe out of that 10 feet. But a fan also pulls. It doesn't just push air. It pulls air through it.
Yep.
And also that smoke isn't all just from BC.
Yeah.
It's also from California where there are also more fires. More
fire, yeah. So,
yep.
Yeah. This kind of reminds me of the flat earther type things. They just don't understand how things actually work.
Mm-hmm. At least this is coming from some plane of reality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the belief that just because you can't see the curvature of the Earth because you are on such a small part of it that it looks flat.
Yeah.
Because the same would be true on like a bowling ball. If you could shrink people that small. And also, we've taken pictures of the round Earth.
Yeah. But people say that's fake, too, so...
Mm-hmm.
There's video, too.
Yeah.
It's the space station up there is keeping video on the entire planet as it rotates.
Oh, but that's fake, too. Yeah, you know.
You know, to most logical people, you would think that once the conspiracy gets that big, that maybe you're off... A little.
Just a bit.
Well, I think a lot of them do it because it's something that they can be a part of.
Yeah, makes them feel special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because just believing in reality isn't special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing gets people together like a persecution complex. But, all right, so next up, Tinder. We all know what Tinder is, right? It's basically the straight version of a Grindr. So this woman actually managed to trick hundreds of men into getting a public Tinder date. The whole thing turned out to be a publicity stunt, though.
Yeah. This woman is an actress, Natasha Ponte. They had a bunch of people working through Tinder to invite thousands of men to come to Union Square in New York City. This was last Saturday. They all got there at the same time, invited to partake in her friend, a DJ, his set he was performing out there. So they showed up and then realized, oh, we're here to meet Natasha. Why is everybody else here?
To meet Natasha.
Yeah, and so she stepped out and said, hi, everyone. As you may or may not know, my name is Natasha, and I have everyone here today to be on a date with me. And essentially said, dating apps are very difficult. Maybe I can bring everyone here in person and see how that goes. So do you have what it takes to win a date with me? Kind of held a impromptu like reality show. Intended to kind of show like the bullshit that people go through on these dating apps of like, oh, I won't date people because of this reason or they have this thing. Like, stuff that doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah.
And so they started going through and saying, you know, let's see. I wonder if they have some of the stuff she did there. Yeah, let's see. Oh, yeah, like saying things like, if you voted for Trump, go. If you, let's see, anyone under 5'10", please leave. No beer bellies, no long beards, no bald guys, no khakis. Also, anyone named Jimmy. I don't enjoy the name Jimmy. basically saying things like, just because someone doesn't check off every box on what we find attractive doesn't mean they aren't. Mm-hmm. It's absurd, isn't it, to judge people on such petty things as if they like to wear khakis. We know that. Look at how angry this makes people. And yet this is what we've been doing the whole time. But yeah, this is all set up in conjunction with a viral video group head up by Rob Bliss. And yeah, so there's a whole video called The Tinder Trap on YouTube. You can watch it. Sort of watch the whole thing play out. It's kind of a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
They had about 100 or 200 guys that stuck around for this competition by the end. Yeah. And she had them do, like, physical things, like, you know, run around, do races, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And it makes a good point about the way that these, like Tinder and Grindr and all that just allows people to be even pickier than they would probably be in person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it kind of defeats the purpose of what the app was originally intended to be, which is to bring people together, and it just manages to isolate people further.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, especially in contrast to like what OkCupid does, which is tries to get a broader picture of you as a person.
Yeah.
And tries to match up people that way instead of just, okay, here's people that are probably around the same age as you are, same place, maybe have a couple things in common, but otherwise you can just look at their profile and be like, left, right, whatever.
Yeah.
And make real quick judgments on people without even, talking to them, which is kind of the point of, like, no bullshit, but also what you participate in is just bullshit.
Mm.
So, it was a good social experiment at the very least.
Yeah.
So what do we got next?
All right. So other than that, let's see what else we got. Oh yeah, Pepsi. So Pepsi has this recently had a $3.2 billion acquisition. There's this company called SodaStream, which actually makes these machines that can actually create carbonated beverages in your own home.
Yep.
Yeah, I've tried those. They work pretty well, actually.
They work really well, exactly, and shockingly well. So as you can imagine, the soda companies were like, oh, crap, we need to get in on this shit. So Pepsi stepped in, and they coughed up $3.2 billion, and now they own SodaStream.
Yeah. Yep. Pretty smart acquisition. I mean, Coke, they did their own.
Yeah.
They had their own machine that they made for, like, $700.
Yeah.
So
I definitely seen or heard a Giant Bomb talk about it all the time. Like, we should get one of these in the office.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you guys did this, like, when you go to, like, a buffet or whatever, and they have that big line of, like, different pops and drinks you could get. And you try mixing them together.
Yeah, so
trying out new things. Some of them work well.
Yeah.
Others don't. This allows you to do that on your own.
Mm.
As well as just get specific types. I think SodaStream was more generic stuff. But yeah, it's a pretty neat idea for people that do drink pop.
Yeah, it makes me also wonder that if Pepsi is going to own them, if they're going to start manufacturing the Pepsi formula as well for the SodaStream machines. So that would make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can definitely buy that stuff, sort of make it on your own.
Hmm.
I think I've definitely seen, like, Coke.
Yeah.
Like, bags of the Coke syrup.
Yeah.
You just add your own carbonated water into it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I'm not sure if Coke would actually do that, though, because they're notoriously, you know.
They like to keep that stuff in-house, which is kind of why they made their own.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, like, it's really proprietary. Their whole bags of syrup have, like, DRM on them, and don't buy one of those.
Yeah, seriously.
As cool as it does look, it actually does look like a really cool machine, but goddamn, for the price, no.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
But, all right. So, new scientific discovery this week. And honestly, I kind of surprised we didn't know this already because it kind of makes sense. But there's been ice that has been found on the surface of the moon, specifically at its poles.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so this is a pretty cool thing. And yeah, there is not a lot of it on there. It's about 3.5% of the area that is in this cold trap where, because the moon is sort of slightly tilted as it rotates, mm-hmm. There are parts of the moon that are never exposed to sunlight.
Yep.
So that's sort of where these are at, especially in some of the craters. Yeah, they got some nice charts here sort of showing you this stuff. And it's sort of a collaboration between a few different groups. NASA was one of them. I think they had the Moon Mineralogy Mapper is an instrument that they have aboard the Indian Space Agency's Chandrayaan-1 spacecraft, which launched in 2008, that is able to, it's designed to detect both the reflection of light off the ice and the signatures of infrared light absorbed by materials like water and ice.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, they were able to sort of study the moon, especially the parts that don't get exposed to sunlight, and figure out that this stuff is actually there.
Yeah.
Potentially for good places for water sources. Mm-hmm. For future explorations of the moon.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, the moon is basically made up of a bunch of stuff that used to be Earth.
Yeah.
There was like a huge planetoid-sized object at some point billions of years in the past that collided with Earth, and pieces of it came off, and eventually it all came together and formed the moon. So,
yep.
Yeah.
And so the neat thing about the moon is it spins at pretty much the same rate as the Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's a whole side of it that we really don't see.
Nope.
Yeah.
But, all right. And next up, Michael Jackson's Thriller, which is a pretty good album, I would say.
One of the best.
One of the best. It is considered a classic for a very good reason. It's got a lot of, on top of MJ himself, you got a bunch of great musicians playing on it, Eddie Van Halen being just one of them. Mm-hmm. It is now no longer the best-selling album in the U.S. It has been knocked down to number 2. What has actually surpassed it? The Eagles' Greatest Hits.
Yeah. 1971 to 1975.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it has been certified 38 times platinum, which nowadays is a bit more complicated to figure out because they also put streams into it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they count plays on YouTube and major streaming services such as Spotify towards the song sales, with 1,500 mm-hmm. streams or 10 song downloads being the equivalent to an album sale,
mm-hmm.
which benefits newer music, and especially music from bands that are still alive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
'Cause I assume Michael Jackson probably doesn't have much official music on like YouTube.
Mm.
Probably more bootleg stuff.
Yeah. And for the record, this is 1971 to 1975, so this is pre-Hotel California Eagles we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is their original stuff. The other one is Greatest Hits Volume 2. That's the one with the cover that looks like a vinyl record.
Yep.
Yeah, that's...
That's the one that's got Hotel California and stuff on it. Yeah. A lot of this stuff was the stuff they had... some of it's before Don Henley joined. Some of it is before, what's his name? A guitarist.
Joe Walsh now.
Yeah, Joe Walsh.
Yeah.
Before he joined up, because he used to be in the James Gang. But,
yeah, basically, I guess, Thriller is 33 times platinum.
Yeah. Joe Walsh is basically the guy who got into the Eagles and stopped having them sound like pussy-ass country rock.
Basically.
Yeah.
I'm serious. I don't know. That early's Eagles is... It's garbage. I'm sorry, but it is.
Yeah, I could take it or leave it.
Yeah.
I, leave it.
I mean, there's bits and pieces that are good, but most of it is shit. It's schlock. Mm. But next up. Did you know that Kevin Spacey had a new movie out this week?
Nope.
Well, neither did anybody else. it was called The Billionaire Boys Club. It was released to select theaters, and it only made $126 on its opening day.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, so it opened last Friday in 8 theaters. Which still
$126. So let's.
Well, they did the math. Well, they did for the whole weekend. So they had $126 for the first day, $162 on Saturday, and for the whole weekend it was $618.
Yeah,
over 11 theaters because there were a few more that opened up on Sunday, and didn't report any grosses on Friday and Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So less than 100 people bothered to watch this.
Well, they went by the average ticket price of about $9.27. Means about 6 people showed up in each cinema on average.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, by far the worst for Kevin Spacey's career.
Oh, God, yes.
And, well, the thing is, this debuted first on VOD.
Mm-hmm.
Which typically you don't do well when you bring them to box office, but if they're good enough, they typically... will bring in, you know, that sort of crowd that will think, oh, yeah, I want to go see that in a theater.
Yeah, last I checked, the movie collectively has made about $1.5 million, which is about a tenth of its budget.
Hmm.
Yep. I imagine, obviously, the scandal did not help at all.
Didn't help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the fact that it did debut on VOD, it's like, why would anybody bother? Because it's still there on VOD.
Yeah, so I guess, let's see, the fate of the film was left in serious question after his accusations came out.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix and MRC fired him from House of Cards, while Ridley Scott replaced him in All the Money in the World. Mm-hmm. The distributor for this is Vertical Entertainment, so we go ahead and release Billionaire Boys Club on VOD and in cinemas. In a statement at the time, Vertical said it was neither an easy nor insensitive decision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they're very much concerned about it, but I assume at a certain point they determined it was a sunk cost anyway and just try to do what they can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it played in theaters in the Bay Area, which is San Francisco, Oakland, Phoenix, Detroit, Minneapolis, St. Paul, New Orleans, Hartford, New Haven area, Miami, Los Angeles, Chicago, Cleveland, and Sarasota, Florida.
Yeah.
The movie's top gross on Friday, $45, was earned at the Metro Movies 12 in Middletown, Connecticut.
Mm.
Followed by the AMC Sundial in Sarasota for $19.
Mm.
Only $9 was generated the AMC Deer Valley 16 in Antioch, California. That could mean only one person showed up at the Deer Valley Cinemas. Ditto for the Lake 21 in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area where the film earned $10 on Friday.
Mm.
But I bet he had the best seat.
Oh, yeah. Those are the best movies to go to, the ones where there's hardly anybody in there.
Yeah.
That guy went to Snakes on a Plane with a friend.
Hmm.
And we were like 2 of 5 people that were in there. So we just fucking talked through the movie. Just talked shit about things and all that. Had fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As far as I know, if you're thinking about, like, is this the record-breaking for, like, the lowest gross of a major motion picture? Well, no, it's not, because in order to be considered like a major motion picture, it has to debut in, like, I think it's like 2,000 something theaters.
Hmm.
I think is the limit, and that record is still being held by the Oogie Loves movie, which was made with, like, I think it was like $30 million and ended up grossing like a few thousand.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at an article about the lowest grossing movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
One is Zizix Road.
Mm-hmm.
$30.
Yep. But again, that's like for select theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Number two, there's nothing here.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a joke.
Probably.
Storage 24. Like, these are movies I've never heard of.
Yeah. Well, no kidding. They only made.
Yeah. But,
yeah, it's funny.
Was it even good? I don't know.
The thing is, a lot of movies, when their gross is that low, it's usually because they bungled the either the marketing team or the producers just completely bungled the release. Because, like, the something gets tied up in, like, the in the rights department or something like that. Like, that's what ended up happening to Food Fight.
Yeah. Well, it's got a 5.6 rating on IMDb, so it's, you know, just an average okay movie.
Yeah. But, anyway, okay. So, next story we got. Hulu is in the works to create a revival for Veronica Mars.
Yep.
They were talking about this for quite some time. And like, we've heard rumors about it and crap, and that's a
they're like always thinking about bringing it back because they brought it back for a movie. That was the thing that was kickstarted. And that was good. But yeah, they are looking at doing an actual revival of the show, Hulu, which makes sense for them to do it at one of these streaming networks. Kristen Bell would be involved, as well as the original creator Rob Thomas. I would assume that we will get most of the people back. I don't think any of them have hit it big or anything. But yeah, it would be good to see, like, grown-up Veronica Mars.
Yeah, it would kind of have to, I mean, the writing would have to be stepped up a little bit, because now all the people that grew up with it are older, so they kind of expect more. We'll see how it goes.
Well, next up, we're finally getting a season two for American Vandal from Netflix. If you don't remember the first American Vandal, it was a mockumentary. It was a satire of the type of true crime stuff that Netflix is famous for. And basically, it was about about someone who would draw penises on cars at this high school.
Who drew the dicks, I think, was the tagline.
And this time, this one is going to be in a Catholic school about someone who apparently put a bunch of laxatives in lemonade, and they're calling him the turd burglar.
And his calling card image is the poop emoji.
Mm-hmm.
Of course it is.
But, yeah. And so I guess the kids that filmed the original documentary get called in to investigate this.
Okay, so now it's getting meta.
Yeah, it is.
They even show the Netflix page for the first season as part of this.
Yeah, it's
like
meta
how viral it went. So, because the first season gets to a point where it's about the documentary itself and how it's affecting things, which is great. And so this is out on the 14th of September, so a couple weeks away.
Yeah.
All right. All right. And finally, we got our last story for the night. It's about Kelly Marie Tran. Now, unfortunately, I don't have a subscription to the New York Times, so it's blocked off for me.
Yeah.
So, Chris, if you could sort of, you know.
Yeah. So, if you don't know, Kelly Marie Tran starred in Star Wars: The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Was one of the big parts of it beyond the main handful that you know Luke, Leia, Rey, Finn, and Poe.
Yeah,
she was one of the new people, and she is Vietnamese. And being the first woman of color in a leading role in a Star Wars film, did not sit well with people.
No, because Star Wars fans are awful.
Yeah, among the issues that people had with it was also that she was a terrible character and all that. It's like, no, she was actually one of the best characters.
Yeah.
She.
I liked her. I thought she was great.
And she helped center Finn with his sort of anger about, you know, wanting to get back at the First Order. And she, you know, was telling him, you know, no, you can't fight hate with hate, you know. You got to fight hate with love.
Yep.
All that sort of stuff. Very much a positive character. And yeah, as a result, she got massive shit online. Ended up deleting her Instagram. and sort of just getting off online altogether.
Pretty much.
And has kind of finally resurfaced with his piece in the New York Times, basically talking about how, I can read a bit here. It wasn't their words. It's that I started to believe them.
Yeah.
The words seem to confirm what growing up as a woman and a person of color already taught me, that I belonged in margins and spaces, valid only as a minor character in their lives and stories.
Mm-hmm.
Those words awakened something deep inside me, a feeling that I thought I had grown out of, the same feeling I had when at 9, I stopped speaking Vietnamese altogether because I was tired of hearing other kids mock me, or at 17, when at dinner with my white boyfriend and his family, I ordered a meal in a perfect English, to the surprise of the waitress who exclaimed, "Wow, it's so cute that you have an exchange student." Yeah, people assume that somebody that looks different obviously can't be a normal person.
Mm-hmm.
She's talking about how, you know, she was taught to be ashamed about her heritage, her culture, all that stuff, for being different. Kind of talk about how now she, and as much as I hate to admit it, I started blaming myself. I thought, oh, maybe if I was thinner, or maybe if I grew out my hair, and worst of all, maybe if I wasn't Asian. For months, I went down a spiral of self-hate into the darkest recesses of my mind, place where I tore myself apart, where I put their words above my own self-worth. And it was then that I realized I had been lied to. I've been brainwashed into believing that my existence was limited to the boundaries of another person's approval. I've been tricked into thinking that my body was not my own, that I was beautiful only if someone else believed it, regardless of my own opinion.
Yep.
And kind of keeps going on, just sort of trying to tear down the assumptions about how, you know, women are supposed to act as well as people of color. I want to live in a world where children of color don't spend their entire adolescence wishing to be white. I want to live in a world where women are not subjected to scrutiny for their appearance or their actions or their general existence. I want to live in a world where people of all races, religions, socioeconomic classes, sexual orientations, gender identities, and abilities are seen as what they've always been, human beings. And she ends pretty well. You might know me as Kelly. I'm the first woman of color to have a leading role in a Star Wars movie and the first Asian woman to appear on the cover of Vanity Fair.
Yep.
My real name is Lone, and I am just getting started. And let's take a look at the comments.
Oh, dear.
There are actually some nice ones that are surfaced up here because the Times goes through and picks, you know, the best ones.
Actually, it moderates.
And yeah. We go over to the all. And, yeah, that's some not great shit.
Yeah.
Again, kind of Star Wars fans are just the absolute worst.
Yeah. Well, I like that she's just decided that, you know what? No, I'm not going to take this crap anymore.
No.
Yeah.
Another entitled millennial writes essays she no doubt thinks is of great importance, uses I or me 59 times in the essay. It's like, okay.
Yeah. These people they make me want to punch them in the face repeatedly.
Mm-hmm. And we also had this same thing happen recently with Ruby Rose, who got to announce that she was going to be Batwoman in the CW DC universe.
Yeah.
And people were mad that she wasn't gay enough for the lesbian character.
Okay.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just... Come on, people.
I think she ended up deleting her Twitter account. She's still going to be Batwoman. I think it starts in December. They're going to have their big crossover event between Supergirl, Flash, and Arrow.
Yeah.
And sort of that is going to happen with Batwoman. It's going to appear, and I think Lois Lane is also going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
As well as Superman, but he's already been in Supergirl a few times.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
I do recommend that everybody should just delete their Twitter account anyway. I don't really see much point in it at this point.
Now it's kind of about shitting on the assholes.
Yeah, there comes a point where it's just like not worth even having it, since you can pretty much read all that stuff if you're not signed in anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, why bother having an account?
Yeah. Mm. But
I kind of like seeing the bullshit that Colin Moriarty goes through.
Mm-hmm.
I think he recently had a podcast where he's trying to have a pity party after relentlessly attacking people.
Hmm.
Yeah. But, all right. So I do believe we got a show, folks.
Yep.
And it was a good show. So, I'd like to remind our listeners, if you have a question, a comment, something you want us to read on your air, or just your insane political manifesto, you can send it to us via letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We have a link in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our little bit of recorded redundancy and such places as Apple Podcasts, Google Play, RSS, archive.org. And just about anywhere else where podcasts like ours are, you know, produced and listened to for your entertainment. And so, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. This has been Let's Weekend. And for Felipe D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Allegri, I'd like to say good night, sleep tight. You know, they finally grabbed him by the pecker.